We're going to be speaking this evening from your favorite book, Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1. And the chapter is chapter 10. And the title of chapter 10 is Departure of Lord Krishna for Dwarka. But he's not going to depart just yet. And this morning, in a different place, we discussed the first three verses of chapter 10. And we're going to, this evening, discuss texts 4 and 5. Chapter 10. The storyline in this section of the Bhagavatam is Kurukshetra battle is over. Maharaj Yudhisthira is installed on the throne. Uttara Kunti Yudhisthira all attempted to stop him from going or some exchange. So Krishna stayed some extra days. But the request of Maharaj Yudhisthira describes the three Ashvamedha yagyas and that were performed by under Krishna's direction by Maharaj Yudhisthira. And still he was feeling very unhappy. Bhishma Dev pacified Krishna. Bhishma Dev passed. Chapter 10 opens with Shaunaka saying, what happened next? Surely Maharaj Yudhisthira was, although he was emperor of the world, was unable to reign as the king in all happiness. Because although he has heard transcendental knowledge from Bhishma Dev, and he was being guided by that transcendental knowledge of Bhishma Dev how to perform the duties of king. In his heart, he couldn't unrestrictedly participate or enjoy those activities because of the pain of so many persons have lost their lives, so many innocent persons have lost their lives, women, children, animals, innocent bystanders unavoidably were hurt, killed. So it was out of duty he ruled. Then it describes a number of things, but because he ruled by Bhishma Dev's instructions, his ruling was infallible. And in the purport, this is just leading us up to the verses we're going to discuss, Prabhupada speaks about a one world order. Uses the term. The conception of one world state can only be fulfilled if we can follow the infallible authority. His point is, people have this United Nations, utopian League of Nations idea. Not going to happen by any man-made method because man-made method is flawed. It's selfishly motivated. It's not going to satisfy people. And conversely, there's only one thing that can satisfy people, and that's connecting with earlier messages of this canto. Yenatma supersedati, when we're satisfied at a soul level. and then the mind and the body, and our ideology can then align itself with real satisfaction of the Supreme. And he's speaking strongly about the necessity of a leader to have kingly power, as if it's like unfettered. But it's fettered. It's fettered by his submission to the Absolute Supreme. And he would never, a qualified king would never do anything other than the indication of the Brahmanas and the scriptures and the Lord. But with that qualification, kingly power. So his comment is, the leaders of today, they don't have that. In fact, he is not very complimentary about what they have. They have their puppets of the voters. And what are the voters? They're uneducated, unqualified, and they're Kali Yuga victims. They select, the dogs elect a powerful dog. The unqualified elect a powerful unqualified who takes advantage of them. So the flow is going from this, what a qualified king is, and the kind of leadership a qualified king can give. One world state. Now, American imperialism has some idea of it, not even American, just like commercialism, consumer economics. You know, that rule the world. Get everybody to buy into it, and then we, you know, everything becomes marketplace. And a resource for selling things, if not selling things, extracting things, and producing things, and consuming things. And we should all have freedom to do that. So, capitalism. Call it democracy. And the more democracy prevails, the more we'll have freedom. And the more we'll have freedom, the more we'll have commercialism and consumerism and prosperity and pie in the sky. That's the dream. Prabhupada is not very complimentary about that model. So the next two verses, the ones that we're going to be discussing this evening, both speak about the prosperity, natural prosperity during the reign of Maharaj Yudhisthira. Land, the cows, the rain, the grains, minerals, the jewels, natural opulence, and the wealth that was supplied to the king from the rivers and the oceans and the hills and the mountains, forest creepers. Everyone paid their taxes to the king in profusion because they were profusely supplying. Why were they profusely supplying? Because religion was being protected. And because religion was being protected, sacrifices were being performed, and so bounty was coming. And the king received. That's the system. And in the purports, well, I'd like to read the purports because so well, so wonderfully written. It's a bit of sociological and a bit of a political commentary. Even if Prabhupada was using this one world state notion, indicates to me that he was tuned into views, just like when, you know, contemporary views. When the very early Back to Godhead magazines were, the titles of the articles were about things that were going on in the world. Because his audience were the newspaper reading Indians that would sit at the tea stalls and read what's going on in the parliament and what's going on with the price of commodities, and what about this stock, and what about that debate, and on the floor of the parliament, and, you know, what's going on, what's, you know, what people in India are still today all involved with. This dignitary insulted that dignitary. Or like the easy journey to other planets, a big thing was space exploration. So he wrote, more than just an article in his Back to Godhead magazine, he wrote a little booklet about it. That's the kinds of things that Prabhupada, early stages, was often writing about for the particular audience that he had. He, you know, because his newspaper, Back to Godhead magazine, that he would personally write, edit, print, and distribute, and preach. So this is something like that. It's commentary on current events, but it's going more to principle, but there's not the absence of what's going on currently. So here's text 4 and the purport. During the reign of Maharaj Yudhisthira, the clouds showered all the water that people needed, and the earth produced all the necessities of man in profusion due to its fatty milk bag and cheerful attitude. A cow used to moisten the grazing ground with milk. Opening line of the purport. The basic principle of economic development is centered on land and cows, land and cow agriculture, and krishi goraksha. Vaishya's job is cow protection and agriculture. So land and cows. The necessities of human society are food, grains, milk, minerals, clothing, wood, etc. One requires all these items to fulfill the material needs of the body. Certainly one does not require flesh and fish or iron tools and machinery. It goes to the other side. During the regime of Maharaj Yudhisthira, all over the world, there were regulated rainfalls. Rainfalls are not in the control of the human being. The heavenly king, Indradev, is the controller of rains. And he is the servant of the Lord. When the Lord is obeyed by the king and the people under the king's administration, there are regulated rains from the horizon. And these rains are the cause of all varieties of production of the land. Not only do regulated rains help ample production of grains and fruits, but, a little cultural item, when they combine with astronomical influences, there's ample production of valuable stones and pearls. He doesn't detail it, but according to astronomical calculation, pearls, we have our scientific explanation. Some sand comes into the oyster and irritates the oyster, and they secrete something to keep that irritation from harming them, and so that makes a pearl. That's one idea. And there may or may not be sand involved in the whole process. But the astronomical statement is when stars are right and the rain is right, that's when the pearls are produced. The jewels are produced. At least that's what Prabhupada is saying here. And because of those two things, valuable stones and pearls were available. Grains and vegetables can sumptuously feed a man and animals, and fatty cow delivers enough milk to supply a man sumptuously with vigor and vitality. If there's enough milk, grains, enough milk and grains, fruit, cotton, silk, jewels. Why do people need cinemas houses of prostitution, slaughterhouses. They just, whole series of questions. Nice way of saying, ah, what is the need of artificial luxuries of cinema, cars, radio, flesh, hotels? Has this civilization produced anything but quarreling individually and nationally? Has this civilization enhanced the cause of equality and fraternity by sending thousands of men into hellish factories and the war fields at the whims of a particular man? Paragraph. It is said here that the cows used to moisten the pasturing land with milk because their milk bags were fatty and the animals were joyful. Do they not require, therefore, proper protection for a joyful life by being fed with a sufficient quantity of grass in the field? Why should men kill cows for their selfish purposes? Why should men not be satisfied with grains, milk, and fruit, which combined together can produce hundreds and thousands of palatable dishes? Why are there slaughterhouses all over the world to kill innocent animals? Mentions Marsh Prichard. Check that tendency. Should not a king or executive head protect the lives of the poor animals who are unable to defend themselves? Is this humanity? Are not the animals of a country citizens also? Then why are they allowed to be butchered in organized slaughterhouses? Are these signs of equality, fraternity, and nonviolence? And now he goes back to the theme of the previous purport. A religious, qualified king like Maharaj Yudhisthira ruled properly, but in this system called democracy, what do we see prevailing? Not a good system. He probably liked the kingly system. Certainly provided that there were qualified kings. And when there aren't qualified kings and you have a kingly system, you have abuse. But you have abuse if there's unqualified elected people too. And they just do what they want. So many examples. You know, Russia and America, chief examples. Elected officials doing what they want. Final paragraph. We are creatures of material nature. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said that the Lord Himself is the seed-giving father, and material nature is the mother of, in italics, all living beings in all shapes. Thus, mother, material nature, has enough foodstuff for both animals and for man by the grace of Father Almighty. Sri Krishna. The human being is the elder brother of all other living beings. He is endowed with intelligence more powerful than animals for realizing the course of nature and the indications of the Almighty Father. Human civilizations should depend on the production of material nature without artificially attempting economic development to turn the world into a chaos of artificial greed and power only for the purpose of artificial luxuries and sense gratification. This is but the life of dogs and hogs. End of paragraph. End of purport. Just during lunch prasadam, I was hearing Prabhupada speaking about the excesses. Not only the whole consumer economy is superfluous, but people can't live without it. What's going to happen when the oil supply, in fact, dries up? It's going to be chaos. As it goes up, it's going to be mad battle for who gets the oil. But, you know, everything runs on oil. Getting our foods, getting our, the price of commodities is going to become so expensive. And all the way that people live their lives, their jobs, it's going to be a madhouse. Head for the hills. Totally madhouse. And, you know, they'll look for some alternative, something, quick, something. Vested interest is so strong. This is the point that Prabhupada is making. They can't do without it. They can't imagine being without their lifestyle. Like Prabhupada told the story, not this time, but he told the story. But he was living as a grahastha. One acquaintance of his was taken to court, and he lost for something that he did wrong, and his penalty was he was bankruptcy, he lost all his wealth. And they said the man died in a year because he couldn't go on living without that standard of living that he had before. He died in a year. His health went down and he died. Just gave up his life. Couldn't live without it. So, one thing, the life of simplicity and the emphasis on economic solution is cows and land, is essential in the Bhagavatam, or, you know, for the purposes of our, well, two purposes. For the purposes of our preaching, that is, reaching out to people, we need to be relatable to them. So we have to do, look something like, or somehow resemble what they are, to bring them to some understanding. So for preaching purposes, it's, you know, a different standard of economy. Or methodology of economy may be useful. Or for persons who are slowly coming, they can't, there are many persons who are just unwilling, most persons are just unwilling to do without their comforts. However, doing so creates a compromise or can easily allow us to become dependent upon artificial things. And dependent upon those artificial things takes us, the further you go away from the Vedic model, the further you become compromised and deal with the complexities of compromise. So we do for the sake of preaching. We deliberately do for the sake of preaching. We do things that we ordinarily wouldn't do for the sake of preaching. We go into circumstances of life and make acquaintance with persons in territory that's not our territory. Their territory. To assist them to come. Take a step. Because of their trust, level of trust. And perhaps we ourselves or others. So these two categories are just can't do without. So there's the compromise or dovetail. But with the compromise, there's complexity. The Vedic system, and that's what the Bhagavatam is presenting, cows and land as the economic basis, Then the next thing, the next purport, text number 5, in italics again, Prabhupada is saying the secret to success is to take refuge under the protection of the Supreme Lord. So because the king did, the citizens followed the king. And because the king and the citizens did, Krishna was pleased. And because Krishna was pleased, all necessities were provided by natural means. But the rains and the production of the land and so forth, the production of the rivers, oceans, hills, mountains, forests, creepers, and active drugs in every season paid their tax quota to the king. That's the secret to success. Live by, or in the case of a king, to rule by, but in our case, to live by, the sense of being protected by the Supreme Lord, as he's saying here in the purport. There are 6 principles of surrender mentioned in Padma Purana. One of them is to see that Krishna is my provider. He's my protector. He's my maintainer and my protector. Not my work is my maintainer. I maintain my family. I have to work hard to maintain my family. That's the kartaham iti manyate way of thinking. And that's part and parcel of this, you know, capitalism. Because I work hard, I can own more, and because I can own more, then I can have more. Have more and happier, more, and then I can own some more because I have more to invest. I have capital. I'm a happy capitalist. But it's not a happy capitalist, and it's not creating a society just as the previous report was showing, where values such as fraternity, equality, nonviolence. It leads to a violent situation. So, with capitalism, or with the present idea of democracy, it's the individual or groups of individuals that make things happen. But as Prabhupada is saying, Maharaj Yudhisthira didn't think like that. They knew perfectly well that the king is the agent of the Supreme Lord to look after the welfare of the mass of people. Actually, the state belongs to the Supreme Lord. Prabhupada said elsewhere, we're spiritual communists. Everything belongs to Krishna. Communism says everything belongs to the state. Capitalism says everything belongs to the man who financed it, the capitalist. And we say everything belongs to Krishna. We'll give it a label. It's spiritual communism. God communism. But he's not an abusive person. He's not a despot. A tyrant. He's benevolent. All the things that supply the necessities of society, of mankind, Prabhupada writes, they're creations of the Supreme Lord. And the living being is allowed to make use of the property of the Lord for the service of the Lord. And he goes the other direction. But today they're saying it's for the people. And so they have government by the people, for the people. And then everything that's produced is for the people. Instead of it's by God and for God. What's missing is God consciousness. So Prabhupada goes so far as to say they've produced a new species of humanity. present moment. And he even says here, this ideology of godly communism by this, the world has to again follow in the footsteps of Maharaj Yudhisthira or Parikshit. Prabhupada's view was not a political rabble-rouser. Down with this government, down with that government. He was very conscious of the fact that as he was traveling around the world and attracting followers, government officers would be looking at him. Who's this guy? What's he saying about us? He was aware. So still he's speaking in principle that democracy leaves much to be wanted. And so, how to make a change? Somebody asked, I think it was just this morning, should devotees aspire for political posts? And my answer was no. Prabhupada was once asked by a reporter, Swamiji, your movement is growing so fast. You have so many followers. If it continues growing at this rate, one day you may be elected the head of the government. Is that your interest? And Prabhupada smiled. He said, we can guide the government, but our interest is not, even if elected. That's something we're interested in. But we are interested in guiding the heads of state and educating the people in general. He writes, without being educated properly, the mass of the people are following the footsteps of the vested interests by exploiting natural reserves. Now they're just following what the leaders do. That's the name of the game, okay, exploit the resources. Let me get my hands on some resources and push people out of the way to get their hands on those resources and exploit them. And as Prabhupada was saying midday today, even if they have great trouble, even if they are, the supply is running out, they can't stop. It's really fearful. A fearful condition. They know the problems, and they can't put on the brakes. There's so many examples. Because it happened directly with someone that I know, shared this one. There was a man, a nice friend of Krishna, who was a robotics coordinator for some university. And it was multidisciplinary, as electrical engineering and mechanical engineering and this engineering and that engineering. And the particular application of robotics was disposal of nuclear waste. Because you can't have people go in there and scoop up the nuclear waste. You have to have a robot go into it. So they would, develop the skill where you could see the nuclear waste through some shield, and the robot would go in and scoop it in and put it in a metal container and sealed metal container. Put the metal container in a conveying vehicle. Conveying vehicle would take them somewhere in West Virginia, dig a big hole, and put them in the hole and seal up the hole. And go get some more. Keep, burying the nuclear waste. Till they found that the containers were leaking. So what to do? So he was describing, they had quarterly national meetings with the Department of Energy and the Department of the Interior, the Department of Defense, the Department of this and that. And said, as far as I'm concerned, it was so obvious, at least right now, shut down production because it's going into the water table. And how long does it take lethal radioactivity to go away? You know that. Thousands and thousands of years. No, we can't stop production. We need the energy. But he quit. He went on for like four quarters. They couldn't do the obvious. He didn't want to have part of that, so he left. Etc. On and on and on. Because people can't stop. The greed is so strong. It's not just, so it's affecting relationships with people, but it's affecting groups of people, and it's affecting nations, and it's affecting the world. And one of the big issues is who owns things, proprietorship. Ishupanishad is very clear. God owns things. Or is he godly communism? But if God doesn't own things, then you have different ideologies of who owns things. And people fight over the idea. They're not fighting over ideology. They're fighting over who owns things. In the name of ideology. It's selfishness. Not over ideology. Leaders are not qualified, but they are elected into a position. They don't have the qualities. So those that do have the qualities have what the influence, like Maharaj Yudhisthira, the production from the land was there in the form of rains and grains. From the cows and the forms of minerals, trees, as he's giving lists here of things that people need, water, cotton, silk, clothing, food, shelter, warmth. With real value in life. So that's the picture that we're getting here from the Bhagavatam. The conclusion that Prabhupada is writing. Therefore, there's acute competition. Without being educated properly, the mass of people are following in the footsteps of the vested interests by exploiting natural reserves, and therefore, there is acute competition between individual and individual and nation and nation. There's no control by the trained agent of the Lord, King. We must look into the defects of modern civilization by comparison here and should follow in the footsteps of Maharaj Yudhisthira. He ends, to cleanse man and wipe out anachronisms. It's like a very nice way to put it. Purity and wipe out anachronisms, the things that are just self-destructive and detrimental to one and all, to ourselves and to others. But there's not education in that regard. And even if they know, we're on the path of a problem. We're heading for a wall, and it's going to be a serious collision. They can't do anything about it. They don't have control of the senses. They don't even. Education, systematic education of people into the real values of life. I'll just share this with you. I had a very interesting weekend, very, very different weekend. Following the Japa retreat was mantra yoga retreat, 10 stage students came. And although it said mantra yoga, they didn't know what mantra yoga is. They came all expecting hatha yoga. So we did some mantra yoga exercises, meaning Badhari leading kirtan, just singing, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, and singing it, very melodiously. And they're looking like, oh, no, came for yoga. One of them turned to another one and said, is this about God? And there was this. So we had to recalibrate the whole, what they were coming expecting. So fortunately, one of the devotees there was there for the purpose of training in yoga. So the whole Saturday was yoga. I mean, hatha yoga. And different. Then he had this, as opposed to sitting and holding a posture, he was calling it vinyasa yoga, or it's moving. You move, like Surya Namaskar. You're moving while you're doing. Anyway, so. And then from that, gradually into pranayama, and then from, it was very nice. From pranayama, a little exercise that he was calling the ocean of Om. So, breathing and breathing and breathing, and then exhaling. Om. That's a part of just the flow from pranayama to the ocean of Om. And then a PowerPoint presentation on the power of sound. How sound moves matter, and even generates matter. And sound moves the mind. And how sound acts spiritually. And then the next was an exercise called Cathedral of Sound, where you could, feel sound in your body. Your body becomes a resonating place for sound, and then japa. It was just about sound. That's this very special sound. And then prasadam break, and then the evening, kirtan yoga. It went on for an hour and a half, and I thought we were going to have the same experience as the night before. Might. But by that time, they were completely in a different space, and they got into the kirtan, and one of them looked at the other one, and they got up and started dancing. And the whole room, everyone was dancing and dancing and dancing and dancing and dancing and dancing and twirling around and circle dancing and dancing and dancing. And then it ended, and they were saying, more, more, more. So there was another one at the end. It was, rounding applause. So, these were all American people, young American undergraduates and a couple of graduates. But they had no education about values. One of them said, I've always had these ideas that I thought people, I wouldn't even share them with people because I thought people would think they're weird. But I came here and there's a whole treasure of these ideas. A whole path how to enter into that experience. And I'm so happy. I feel validated. There's no education. No education at all. These are college students. They're well-educated young American people. For all of the liberality of freedom and so forth. Anyway. A very interesting experience. the necessity of education. However, one may have to, you know, go out and further out just to bring the education experience into people's lives. You have to be pretty creative sometimes, but it's so much needed. Any discussion? Anything this one? I know what I do and I know what I advise. If there's something that you think you need, wait a while, see if you really need it. Think at least 20 times. Even if it's authorized, you know. Do I need this? And even when things come your way that you don't have to buy, and this, at least this happens to me, there's lots of no thank yous because I don't need it. I can receive it and give it to somebody else, but that may need it or may appreciate receiving something. But for just on the in the category of spending or consuming, do I really need this? Okay, if I need it, then let me get something that I need, and then I'll be very careful to use it, because I've gone through that, consider, you know, 20 times contemplation, at least 10 times. If I need it, then I need it. I'll use it, but I'll take care of it properly. And those things that we need, Krishna provides. So your question about savings, I don't know if you want that to be addressed. If it's a principle, it's not an amount, it's just a principle. But if there's some emergency, something needs to be set aside. That's what, you know, it's a principle. And it may not be very much, because I may not have very much to set aside. Something. So when there's an emergency. And one should be reluctant to borrow from the emergency fund of someone else. Sometimes that can be done. But one should be, you know, 10 times about that. Because being a debtor is not a good position. And relationships can be hurt very, very badly by issues over money. But, you know, sometimes it can be like that. Persons that borrow can very easily put themselves in big distress. And that's our culture here. Deficit spending. It's just part of the culture. I don't buy into it at all. Prabhupada explained, Harikesh explained to me that he had like a 3-day conversation, extended conversation with Prabhupada about, from the first canto, about paper money as being the place where the standard, artificial standards of living began. Because before paper money was coins, gold coins, something that had, you know, durable value. And before gold coins, or other than gold coins, some commodity, grains, or something. When, as soon as it became paper, then you know it's how much faith you have in whoever stands behind that paper. But then, you know, I can build in an industry that costs mega, mega money, and all it is paper. And so there wasn't industry. There were ways of making iron instruments, but it wasn't, you know, industry like we know it. Just making so many useless products. Detailed explanation that Prabhupada went into was how paper currency did it. You know, the original currency was, is this called a silver certificate? If you wanted, you could take that silver certificate to a bank and ask for that dollar's worth of silver. Or gold, the gold standard. Gone. And then it's inflation. And then it's crazy. And then inflation sags and everybody freaks out. Then when you have this world economy, one big nation goes down, the whole world goes down. That's from paper currency. Instead of, because it's on the theme of real economic development, is land, which means what comes from the land, and cows, which what comes from the cows. Krishi Gora. You go away from that standard. You have artificial economy. And artificial economy goes up and artificial economy goes down. Something else? Yes. Which? Greed. So it takes a change of heart, and it takes education. Education means, you know, information, but real education is a change of heart. We're resetting the direction of our life. It takes time. It takes, you know, a qualified teacher to teach you, a person whose life is taken a different direction. They can take you that different. Some persons are good at something, and some persons are good at teaching something. Rare is it to find somebody that's good at something and can teach that something. And when we're speaking about, you know, overcoming greed, like, you know, the qualities of life, that's really very fundamental. It's a change of consciousness. And with that change of consciousness, there's a whole outlook and thank you for the question, because what these two verses are doing is showing the outlook of seeing richness, wealth, in society based upon piety, not based upon greed. Piety meaning, this is in italics, depending upon the Supreme Lord. Not based upon how clever you are, or how quick you are, or how slick you are, or how active you are, how many strings you can pull. It's piety. And that's the outlook, that's the faith of one that has become free from greed. Specifically in the first canto, it describes that the opulence of Maharaj Yudhisthira rivaled that of King Indra. King Indra was worried, Yudhisthira may be after my post. But he wasn't. Opulence that rivaled the king of heaven on earth. It was so notable of a personality that he would be visited by denizens of other planets. The demigods would come to visit Maharaj Yudhisthira. On the strength of piety, his virtue, and virtue properly placed. So, that's inspiring. But it's very foreign to our educated members of society today. You have something? And also complex. Well, as a strategy for preaching, that is, we have this high standard over here, and there are people over there that they look at this high standard and they go, "Oh my God, I can't relate to that." So we don't compromise internally, but we may go into a circumstance of life where we're like them. At least, you know, apparently, externally, we're like them. You know, dressed like them and walking like them. So, you know, and we're friendly. Oh, he's friendly. I think of it, the image is make a bridge from where we are to where they are, and you go over on the other side of the bridge and you hang out with them for a while. The purpose is not to become like them, the purpose is to build some kind of rapport, some kind of trust, and then you point to the bridge. They go, "Sure, I'll take one step on that bridge with you, I trust you." And you're gradually explaining what the bridge is about. It's to another. They don't really have a sense of what that other is because you haven't freaked them out by showing the whole thing. It's not tricking. It's just, helping them to, because the trust is upon the quality of the person. Not their mumbo-jumbo, but the quality of the person. And because the quality of the person is worthy of their trust, they can move with that person. Like Prabhupada did. He came and sat down in the middle of hippie park, and there, you know, smoking dope and taking drugs and freaking out, and he's just chanting Hare Krishna. Like that. That's what I mean. Go into their venue and not be judgmental and not be standoffish. Just, you know, be yourself, but in that venue. And then gradually they can come from that position to a more purified state. giving this example of what we just did this past weekend. We thought, you know, the conception that those of us that had planned this event was we were going to go this far. And when we saw what the situation was, we had to go all the way over to where they were. And it's okay. Because once, you know, their needs and concerns were met, and they saw, hey, you're good people. Anything else? Thank you very much.